This is an iHeart podcast.
We remember 9/11 tonight. We talk about unconstitutional gun grabbing, and we do so much more coming up tonight on I'm Right. Anniversary of 9/11. You know that undoubtedly by now. 22 years ago was 9/11. I say you know that undoubtedly by now because this is the day where we as a nation, we kind of look around and we take stock of where we were, where we are. What were we thinking then? What do we think about it all now? Have our perspectives changed? It's a different day for a lot of different people, and people assess this day in different ways. The veterans might look at it different than other people. Cops, firefighters may be different than other people. People have gotten disillusioned extremely with this government. That's like most of us. Probably look at it differently than those who have not. With days like today, I never am quite sure how I want to approach it. I generally fall on this side of it, though. Honoring the fallen. Honoring the fallen. I think it's important to take time to do that. I think it's important to honor people's memories. I don't like it that we forget about our heroes all the time. Or not just veterans, our heroes in society. They come and they go. We remember the rapper's name for decades, but we forget about the heroes. Does that make sense? And when it comes to that day, the individual stories, you know, we've all seen the footage of the towers and the crashes and the falling and everything else, but the individual stories. Maybe the biggest gut punch about today is whenever I go back and I listen to Brian Sweeney's voicemail, he left his wife. This was the last time she ever heard from him.
Jules, this is Brian. Lives on an airplane that's been hijacked. If things don't go well, it's not looking good. I just want you to know I absolutely love you. I want you to do good. So happy to sign. Same to my parents and everybody. And I just totally love you. And I'll see you in Denver. Bye, babe.
I'll see you when you get there. Something to think about, right? I think about that falling man image. We've all seen it forever. You've seen it for 22 years. You've seen it. That is a living human being. Well, for another split second anyway. It's a living human being who went to work normally that day and then at some point in his day was forced to stand out the open end of a skyscraper that had a big hole in it and choose between burning to death or diving to the pavement below. And obviously he made the choice that, I don't know, choice I would probably make. I think about all the others, the people who were trapped in there, most of them about to die, their voicemails.
Sean, it's me. I just wanted to let you know I love you, and I'm stuck in this building in New York. There's lots of smoke, and I just wanted you to know that I love you always.
At number 2 World Trade Center, right? Maybe the shield is in the walking. We're not ready to die, but it's getting bad. Oh, God! Oh!
It's tough, isn't it? All we can do is honor their memory. And we can endeavor to never, ever, ever take this day and be like this woman here.
Not only a place on our calendars, but a place in our collective memory. December 7th, 1941, September 11th, 2001, and January 6th, 2021.
January 6th. Probably a decent time to bring up this little fact that they compare 9/11 to January 6th. Well, pause for a moment and think about all the things they did in response to 9/11. Did they feel that same kind of response is necessary for January 6th? Interesting question, isn't it? Anyway, joining me now to tell his 9/11 story, we all have one, Colley Stimson. He is the former Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Detainee Affairs under President George W. Bush. Cully, 9/11, everyone who was alive and able to produce memories knows where they were, what the deal was. Where were you?
I was the lieutenant commander in the Navy Reserves, but on that day I was working for Corporate America, and I was a vice president for Marsh McLennan. I ran their private equity M&A shop out of D.C., and I was taking some clients on a golf course here in the D.C. area. And of course, we had an office on the 93rd through 100th floor in the World Trade Center, and the first plane that hit the first tower hit Marsh and killed 385 of my colleagues.
God, mercy. Okay, after the attacks, I can only assume you got a phone call, didn't you?
I did. Like a lot of people, I was put on standby by my CO. And I was in the first wave of Navy JAGs recalled back to active duty. And one of the things I really remember, Jesse, is my wife was on a business trip. She was in California, I was here in D.C. We knew that the likelihood of getting recalled was very high. And I got called at 7 in the morning by my CO, and she said, you got 72 hours to get your sea bag and go. And I said, aye, aye. And I called my wife, so it was 4 in the morning, her time in San Diego. And I said, I got the call. And my wife said, do your duty. That's all she said. And I'm sure that a lot of spouses said the same exact thing, because at that time, as you remember, because you served honorably in the Marine Corps, there was a sense of duty and honor, and you did your job. And a lot of people did.
Yeah, a lot of people did. What a woman you got there. I love that story. Cully, maybe I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong. We don't feel like that country today. And I know countries change and times change. I get all that. But, you know, we all ask ourselves that question, because I remember a time of unity, at least for a brief time after it was over. We all ask ourselves that question, will we unify again? And I don't know if that would happen again. Man, I hope I'm wrong about that.
Well, I hope you're wrong, too. But most people don't even realize, Jesse, that we're still in a state of armed conflict. We're at war, literally. Legally speaking, we're at war. I remember Secretary Rumsfeld, who I had the privilege of working for as Deputy Assistant Defense Secretary, used to say to his political appointees, and there was only a handful of us, he would come into the building at 6:30 in the morning. He would leave at 6:30 at night and head back across the Potomac to his house in D.C., and he would say, we're the only building at war. He said, all the lights are on at the Pentagon. I crossed the river, and all the lights are off in the other federal government buildings. And this was in 2006. So here we are in 2023, and I bet if you did a man on the street walk around and asked 100 people, are we at war, most of them look at you like you're nuts, but we still are.
Cully, looking back now, how do we assess the global war on terror? I know a lot of people, especially veterans who served, have a lot of different ways they look at it. And most of the veterans I talk to today, sadly, do not feel wonderful about the whole thing. You served. How do you feel about it?
Well, like you, Jesse, I served in the Department of the Navy. I did my 30 years, retired as a captain a year ago or so. And, you know, no one wants war. This war came to our shores just like it did at Pearl Harbor. There is evil in the world. It's a black and white thing. I mean, there is evil. I know some people are naive and don't think there is evil. But when you talk to these terrorists, and I've been in the interrogation booth in the room, I helped bring the 14 high-value guys out of the shadows to Guantanamo Bay in September 2006. They have a saying, Jesse. You guys have watches. We have calendars. They take the long view, just like the Chinese do now. There is evil in the world. And so the sacrifices that happened not only on 9/11, this solemn day, but then afterwards in the Battle of Fallujah, in Afghanistan, across many provinces, in Iraq, where you served with honor with the Marine Corps, that's part of the price of freedom. Doesn't make it any easier. So I hope young women and men today who are physically fit and have courage and patriotism in their DNA step up. And I know they do, because I was at the Naval Academy yesterday. It was alumni weekend, and I saw a lot of young men and women in uniform proudly walking around that base. And so I'm a glasses half full guy, and I'm bullish about the future. I hate politics. Politicians ruin it for the rest of us. But we still are a great country, and it's worth fighting for.
Colleague, Semper Fi, brother. Have a good one today.
Semper Fi.
All right. Joe Biden was not in New York City for 9/11. He was, well, we'll talk about it in just a moment. Before we get to that, let's do this really quickly. Buy one, get one free. You've heard me talk to you about Eden Pure Thunderstorm for a long time. By now, it's over 350,000 of these things have been sold. Look at all the five-star reviews. They're miraculous. They remove all the odor from the air in your room. And I don't mean cover it up. They remove it. Your air will be cleaned. Viruses, mold, it's gone. The worst smells either. Pets, cigarettes, gone. Right now, they're buy one, get one free for a limited time. Go to EdenPureDeals.com and use the code Jesse and take advantage of it. I own 9 of them. Apparently, I missed out on one. I should have waited for buy one, get one free. EdenPureDeals.com, code Jesse. All right? We'll be back. Do you remember when we had a president who wasn't embarrassing? And look, I say this, that actually wasn't me being partisan like I normally am, and I don't pretend to be nonpartisan, bipartisan. No, no, no. I'm very, very partisan. I'm as anti-communist as it gets. But the thing is, it's so embarrassing having a guy as commander-in-chief who you cringe whenever you hear he's giving public comments. Like today, you know, anniversary 9/11. And Joe Biden is not in New York City. That's a very normal thing for presidents to do. They go to New York City or they go to the Pentagon, give a speech at the site where the crashes were and whatnot. And it's supposed to be kind of this big deal, this little mini scandal that Joe Biden isn't there. Joe Biden stopped over in Alaska to say a couple words. And we're supposed to act like, oh, no, he should be in New York City. And I'll be honest with you, I don't think I agree. Why do we want him in New York City? Why do we want him anywhere? Joe Biden's not a functional adult, and it's embarrassing when he talks. And it gets really embarrassing when he goes overseas. And let me explain something to you about why this happens, about how this happens, I guess I should say. One, you know anybody, any older folks with dementia? Have you ever known somebody like that? Maybe a relative. It's a very sad thing. It's a very sad thing when, forget dementia aside, start to get old and start to deteriorate. You're not doing as well anymore. All right, so that's an older person. They need a lot of rest. They need a lot of rest and a lot of care. And they need to be in restful environments that gives them their best days. When they're of rest, care, restful environments, they have their best days. When they don't rest, agitated, not resting, not sleeping, they get really bad. Well, here's the thing about overseas travel. I've done a little bit of it, not a ton, not some world traveler, but I've done a little bit of it a few times in the Marine Corps and otherwise. And even when you're young and fit, overseas travel is exhausting. I was tired for a couple days. The time changes, you're all screwed up. I know Joe Biden gets to travel on Air Force One. I know he's got a fancy bed on there and not 5-star hotels. No, I get it, but it's still exhausting. And this is why Joe Biden, as much as he embarrasses himself at home, somehow is even worse when he has to travel overseas.
I see. I'm just following my orders here. Staff, has anybody haven't spoken to? No, I ain't calling on you. I'm calling on, I said I had 5 questions. Anita from BOA.
That's the President of the United States of America. I just hang on, I'm following my orders here. How utterly embarrassing. That's the commander in chief. And that whole thing I just talked about tired, needing to go to bed, well, it's bad enough he's so old. It's even worse that he, frankly, got pretty honest about it there towards the end.
Anyway, I just think that there are other things on leaders' minds, and they respond to what's needed at the time. And look, nobody likes having celebrated international meetings if you don't know what you want at the meeting, if you don't have a game plan. He may have a game plan. He just hasn't shared it with me. But I tell you what, I don't know about you, but I'm going to go to bed.
All right, so that brings us to another conversation we can have really quickly here. You see, there's something about politics that makes me laugh. It always makes me laugh. The predictability of what I'm about to say makes me laugh. Politicians, when it comes to running for president, and not just politicians, actually, anybody, but mostly politicians are the ones that run for president, when they're planning on running for president, they do this for many offices, I should know, but president's the worst offender. Whenever they're planning on running, they always, Republican, Democrat, doesn't matter who they are, they always, 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 always insist they're not running. It's the most universal truth in the world. All of them do this without end. They all do the exact same thing. They follow the exact same steps. The reporter starts sticking a microphone in their face. Hey, hey, are you going to run for office? No, 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 I'm no interest. No, I'm not running. Stop asking me. I cannot be president. I have no desire. Not going to be running. And that always takes place about 15 minutes before step two, where they step up to the podium and do the, well, I wasn't going to run. As you know, I said I wasn't going to run. Bob, you remember I said it. But then all these people have been begging me to run. And like Cincinnatus, I feel a duty to answer the call and run for president. Gavin Newsom's on step one as we speak.
Filing deadlines haven't passed. President Biden doesn't run. Why shouldn't we consider you a likely candidate?
Well, I think the vice president is naturally one lined up, and the filing deadlines are quickly coming to pass, and I think we need to move past this notion that he's not going to run. President Biden is going to run, and looking forward to getting him reelected. I think there's been so much wallowing in the last few months and hand-wringing in this respect, but we're gearing up for the campaign. We're looking forward to it.
You hear these calls privately. What do you tell these donors who are wallowing in this?
Time to move on. Let's go.
Yeah. Time to move on. What a guy, right? What a guy. Look, he's telling them it's time to move on. He doesn't even want to be president. He's not even interested. He even tried to do the thing where he's like, hey, man, it's obviously Dome. I'm all about Dome.
And am I supposed to interpret that comment about the vice president that if for some reason the president chose not to run at this point,
well, that's the next,
everybody
that,
rallies
that's
around
the,
her?
It's the Biden-Harris administration. That's a, maybe I'm a
you
little old-fashioned.
Yeah,
maybe
you
I'm a little
that.
Maybe I'm a little old-fashioned about what, you know, presidents and vice presidents. I was a lieutenant governor, so I'm a little subjective.
It's your relationship with the vice president.
We knew each other before we were both in politics. The day I got sworn in as mayor, walked across street. She got sworn in as district attorney. Extraordinarily close working relationship, including her time in the Senate.
So you can't imagine ever having to run against each other?
Of course not. By definition, won't happen.
Of course not. We're so close. Gosh, we're practically like this. We're best friends. We're sworn in together. My goodness, we would never. Yeah. Yeah, if Joe Biden does do what I've been claiming he's going to do forever, now I've been telling you I think he's going to resign for health reasons, of course, Gavin Newsom will be in the race in about 5.5 seconds. And that little clip he just gave about, best friends, I love Dome, we're super close, will be long, long, long forgotten. I know how this works. But let's say he doesn't. Let's say he really bows out. Maybe the donors push him away. Sorry, we got to have Dome, got to have Dome. Well, America can just prepare itself for this person being president of the United States of America. Come on. Governor of New Mexico just banned people from carrying guns? But what? That doesn't make sense. Can she do that? Let's ask Dana about that. Dana Lash is going to join us next. Before we get to that, let's do this. Let's all of us make sure 2023, 2024, best year we've ever had. Well, how are we going to do that with all these crappy elections, right? Crappy elections, the dollar, look at my bank account. How are we going to do that? Oh, we're all going to start taking care of ourselves first, our health. I take a male vitality stack from Chalk every single day. I hate big pharma, as you know. I'm a big believer in natural. These are all natural herbal supplements. A male vitality stack from Chalk, 20% increase in your testosterone in 90 days, fellas. Female vitality stack for the ladies. Chalk is your stop. Start living your life in a better way than you ever have before. 35% off subscriptions. No matter what you're looking for, go see what they have. The anti-communist Chalk have you covered. CHOQ.com. Promo code Jesse gets you 35% off those subscriptions. Go now. We'll be back.
All of them.
Yeah.
You took
but your point is valid.
You took an oath to the Constitution. Isn't it unconstitutional to say you cannot exercise your carry license?
With one exception, and that is if there's an emergency, and I've declared an emergency for a temporary amount of time, I can invoke additional powers. No constitutional right, in my view, including my oath, is intended to be absolute.
I love these people. I'm telling you, you gotta love the balls on that woman, which is odd because it's a woman. Well, it's an emergency, which I myself declared. What? Joining me now, the great Dana Lash, who needs no introduction, host of The Dana Show, which you can watch 12 to 3 Eastern, Monday through Friday, right here on the first. Dana, she decided it was an emergency, so now she has no choice.
And she did. Jesse, it's good to be with you. Good to see you. Yeah, and you're right. I mean, the balls on that woman, she may very well have them. We don't even know anymore. We can't assume. It is, and she's got four federal lawsuits now pending against her, well, the state, because of this edict. And now all of these people are caught in this legal purgatory until there's some sort of judicial resolution. And I love how the Bernalillo County Sheriff came out issued a statement saying that he was very strong words. And I think, Jesse, this is the first law enforcement head that we have seen come out and say this as strongly as he did. He said that it was unconstitutional. He even questioned, you know, how it can be enforced. And the weird thing about this, you know, she says that it's a public health emergency. And the public health emergency is actually created, Jesse, by their policies. I want to just go back to 2014 really quickly, because that's when it really began kicking off. The crime spike in New Mexico, particularly in Albuquerque, because in Albuquerque, and I know you've talked a lot about the Soros-backed DAs, it's a very real thing. They had one such DA who's now the Attorney General of New Mexico, Torres, a longtime Democrat stooge, and she's handpicked another one to replace him now that he's AG. But under Torres, in fact, the previous police chief in Albuquerque, Jesse, had said that the way that they have the case structure, the way that they're just shoving cases through to reduce the prison populations, it's allowing repeat offenders to walk. I mean, the police chief at the time began criticizing how Torres was handling the caseload in this count in New Mexico and in Albuquerque. And then we see, you know, the crime rate spike, businesses begin complaining, and the mayor of Albuquerque, and this was just like a year or two ago, Tim Keller responded and told the businesses that if they were upset about the crime and if they were upset about maybe needing more police protection, then maybe perhaps they should pay a little bit more to have police protection, which anywhere else would be called racketeering. And so under Tim Keller with the Democrat City Council, they gave six figures of taxpayer dollars to Planned Parenthood. I mean, that's public, all public information. They gave Planned Parenthood something like $250,000 instead of using that for expansion of police protection for businesses who were suffering at the hands of these Soros-backed policies that were creating soft targets out of everybody in Albuquerque. That is the public health emergency. That's really what they should say. It's Democrat policies that are creating victims. And her response, she even noted that criminals aren't even going to follow this law. So then why the hell even have it? Why even have something like this? You know criminals aren't going to follow it. You know it's not going to be enforced. And she said that after 30 days, they're going to reevaluate it to see if it will continue. 30 days to slow the spread, I guess. This, I think, to put on my tinfoil hat, I think it's kind of a test. And I think she got a little over her skis here, which made her party uncomfortable. It's a mess.
Dana, speaking of making her party uncomfortable, I'm glad you brought up that part. I saw even professional dorks like David Hogg and Ted Lieu were speaking out against it. Of all people, those two, why? I don't understand why. Those two are as gun-grabbing losers as anybody in the country.
That, and I love that you bring that up because it's a very good point. They are speaking out because Grisham's blowing their cover. Democrats' whole point about gun bans and confiscation is to do it incrementally. They don't want to scare the normies out there, right? They don't want to cause like good, you know, law-abiding innocent people to become suspicious over what they're doing. So it's they have a twofold strategy here. They want people to think that, oh, well, there are some gun control advocates who, you know, are sensible and try to disarm you and get you to lower your guard by thinking that they're sensible, even though that they have a history of literally calling for this exact same thing, albeit nationally. But then also they're trying to take a stand against Grisham, at least optically, because she blew their cover. I mean, she went whole hog, pun intended, into this thing when it's supposed to be banned by increment. It's supposed to be very slow, like the whole proverbial frog in the pot of boiling water. You very slowly turn up the heat. The frog has no idea. That has been their whole approach here. And she just like went total, you know, Leroy Jenkins into this, and she'd ban everything for 30 days and then I'll reevaluate it. Well, that blew everything for them. So they have to kind of like, they have to save some face and take a stand. And that's exactly what that is.
Dana, can you explain why she would pull such a stupid move? You mentioned incrementals the way they've always gone, and they've been very successful at that, eating away at our gun rights for over 100 years now. So why come out and do something dumb? I mean, the people in New Mexico, I've seen the videos, I know you've seen them, they're not even complying. She just made herself look like an idiot.
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question. This is where I mentioned to you a little earlier, you know, I have like some tinfoil and sometimes I fabricate a hat out of it. And this is where one of those times where I do such a thing. I think she's term limited out. She doesn't really have, I think, any kind of future political prospects. She's not a big fundraiser, as I understand it. So I think that it kind of seems to me like this is a test case to speculate, a test case to see how and to what extent public health emergencies can actually be used in order to curtail rights or control the behavior of citizens. And we've seen this used before, except it's been knocked down in court before when the CDC tried it with the rent moratorium under the guise of, you know, public health emergency. It was determined, you guys don't have that right. I mean, that's beyond your purview. But I think that she's testing this, again, me speculating, it's a Democrat testing it at a state level as opposed to with, you know, one of these bureaucratic agencies at the national level. Because I cannot, for the life of me, figure out why someone would go so stupidly headfirst into this without even, because I played the clip on my radio program earlier of the Bernalillo County Sheriff saying that this caught him by, the way he talked about it, Jesse, he said it caught him by surprise. Like he wasn't apparently expecting her to do this or say what she said. So why would you, if you're a Democrat governor, come out with something like this not before you even have law enforcement heads all on your side? She didn't even check to make sure that her six was covered before she ran out and floated this. So I mean, it may be Occam's razor that she just really is that ridiculous and reckless and incapable and incompetent as an elected official, which would explain her party affiliation. But I'm always looking to see what the, you know, I'm instead of watching what the right hand's doing, I'm looking to see what the left hand is doing as well. So I just, you know, I'm just kind of wondering if it's not like a test case for a state by state public health emergency, as opposed to, as you know, we'd said, the national level.
Dana, we didn't see any mass noncompliance, sadly, from freedom-loving Americans during COVID. Do you think this is the kind of thing that would prompt mass noncompliance? Or do you think the American people have, I mean, obviously not your audience, but they've just kind of gotten so whittled down that they would go along with it?
I think that people are begging for an opportunity to demonstrate mass noncompliance. I know I sure as hell am. We saw some people doing that in New Mexico Sunday. They had a huge rally where people were open and concealed carrying their legally purchased private property as free citizens. And no one was arrested. There was no enforcement. I mean, I don't even know how they could enforce it. So I do think that we have reached the limit of patience with a lot of people. Because, Jesse, it's really the people who just want to be left alone, who want to go about, you know, the day-to-day tasks in their lives, who don't want to be bothered by stupid bureaucrats. Those are the people that you don't want to tick off. Those are the people that you don't want to be looking to engage in mass noncompliance, because those are the people that get stuff done. And so I think we're really testing the limits of all of those people, which I think include us. So I mean, I don't think that this is not going to be successful for her. She's going to get laughed out of court with this. If we've seen anything with Bruin and with Heller, it's not going to, or and the CDC moratorium on public health emergencies and how that worked out in the circuit court. So I don't think this is going to go well for her. And this is going to be the epitaph on her political career.
Gosh, I love hearing that. Dana, do the best. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Jesse. Good to see you.
You know, do keep in mind that the governor just did what they all want to do, right? They all want to disarm you. And why? You know why? We talk about it in very frank terms on this show a lot. Why do they want to disarm you? Is it about crime? Is it about the latest school shooting? Why don't they want you to have guns? They want to hurt you. They do. These people want the freedom to hurt you if you don't do as they say. It's not more complicated than that. And there's something else that's maybe even simpler, this concept. You don't have to stay in your timeshare because of Lone Star Transfer. And I say it's even simpler because you're just a phone call away. You want out of your timeshare. You've called, you've emailed, maybe you're even texting with them, please let me go. And they tell you, no, sorry, can't do it. And you think you're done, but you're not done. Because Lone Star Transfer has helped over 18,000 people legally and permanently get out of their timeshare. They are successful. Get your mind around this. 99% of the time. They're so confident. This borders on being cocky. They guarantee it. They put it in writing and they give you a time frame for it. Call them. 844-310-2646 or go to LoneStarTransfer.com. You don't have to keep paying the annual fees. You don't have to keep paying the special assessments. Get out of your timeshare now, all right? We'll be back.
I got to remember that, if I'm not mistaken, Mr. Roy was the chief of staff for Ted Cruz when they urged us into that shutdown in 13. And, you know, that went so well. So I think here in 13, 18, 19, we've had these shutdowns. They haven't accomplished a hell of a lot. And when people tell me that they want to just shut the country down, all right, I'll walk with you a little bit, but tell me what the end result is. Tell me how you're going to change the outcome here.
How are you going to convince them of what you're saying, though? These are your fellow Republicans.
Take my bill just for a second. Sure, take my bill, if you will, Homeland Security. All the things that they're asking for in H.R. 2, we're funding in our bill. But, you know, that doesn't get you on TV every day, and that kind of rhetoric is good for, you know, winding up the crowds in your hometown. But as far as making our government function and making it work for the American people, it doesn't make any sense.
I wonder who that Democrat is attacking my boy Chip. Joining me now, Congressman Chip Roy from the great state of Texas. Hey, Chip, who was that Democrat taking shots at you on TV?
Hey, Jesse, good to see you, brother. Well, it's one of my fellow Republicans. Look, we just flat disagree on this. Yeah, this is not a close call. Yeah, I was there with Ted Cruz in 2013. Jesse, you remember that. You're a big friend and fan of Ted Cruz. And look, you know what the result was in 2014? Republicans did quite well. And we gained 13 seats, raised the House number up to 247. Why? Because we fought for something. And Republicans ran last year on actually fighting for something. And unfortunately, most of my Republican colleagues don't seem willing to honor that commitment to end up, you know, trying to produce a result rather than just passing bills that are going to die in the Senate. That's the whole point here. With all due respect to my colleague, yes, he and others, in part due to the deal we were worked out in January to have more conservatives on the Appropriations Committee, we now have a Homeland Appropriations bill that does move the needle in the right direction. But it's not enough. We need to make sure that whatever we're doing is actually going to stop the flow at the border. And passing appropriations bills that are going to die in the Senate is not going to do that. That's our point. We have no interest in funding Alejandro Mayorkas to continue to screw over the people of Texas, endanger us, endanger people to die from fentanyl, allow of terrorists to come into our country, allow ammo to be found along the border, as you've seen reporting in the last week, and importantly, to have people getting sold into the sex trafficking trade. No longer, not on our watch. Texas has spent $10 billion. It's time for this to end, and that's what this is about.
Chip, can you explain where we're at in this appropriations process? You've already told us we have this appropriations process going on right now. We have to figure out what we fund, what we don't fund. I know we're not going to get everything we want. I'm not an idiot. But I also understand, hopefully we can get something. What are we trying to get, and what are our odds to get it?
Yeah, I mean, look, our odds are wholly dependent on whether Republicans will fight. And don't laugh, because I know what your response is going to be on that. You have rightfully been raising questions and mocking the Republicans who go out and complain about the Department of Justice, but yet are almost certain to fund that Department of Justice in about 3 weeks. That's the point. So I just want everybody out there to understand. Last December, Republicans, 17 Republican senators, joined forces with the Pelosi Democrat to jam through an omnibus bill that virtually every House Republican opposed and that the American people opposed. And what the question is going to be on September 30th is, are we going to rubber stamp a continuing resolution that is a bill that will keep government funded at last year's levels? Are we going to maintain that status quo? If we do, then we're maintaining the funding and the priorities of the Biden administration and at the grossly high level from last December. Our position is that we should not do that. We should limit those funds and or get massive policy changes, starting first with the border and ensuring that we actually change what's happening at the border with respect to the assault on Texas and endangering our country, but also dealing with things like the Department of Justice, the Department of Defense and its wokeness. And frankly, I'm just going to be blunt, Jesse. I'm saying to my Republican leadership, pick a damn fight, any fight. Just give me a fight so that we can actually go stand up and say it's a fight that we're going to stand up and fight for. I think it ought to be the border, maybe a few of those other provisions. But, you know, you tell me, should we fund the ATF to go after American citizens with pistol braces or universal background checks? Should we fund the Department of Justice to target Scott Smith and Mark Houck and former President Trump? Should we fund Alejandro Mayorkas to allow cartels to own our border, send people in, send fentanyl in, allow our kids to die? Should we continue to fund a DOD that's funding all sorts of woke programs and funding abortion tourism and transgender surgeries? You tell me. I don't think my constituents want me to take their tax dollars and fund that garbage. That's what the fight is about.
Chip, what's going on at the Marine Corps University? My goodness, what is happening to my beloved Marine Corps?
Well, it's pretty sad, actually. You know, you might know there's something called the Krulak Center, right? Which was named after Brute Krulak, and Marines will understand that. And they've got a program there that has now gone all entirely woke. And it has some private funding, but it also has government funding. And here's, I'm looking down because I can't remember the exact wording. Here's the kind of stuff they're promoting there. We dug a little bit after a tweet, and they actually fired back to defend themselves, doubling down on their wokeness. What we found is a program with a breakdown that says the following, quote, what is gender? And how is it different from biological sex? How are war narratives constructed through gender discourse? How can we imagine nonviolent masculinities? I don't even know what that means, Jesse. How can we imagine nonviolent masculinities and the role they might play in conflict? How might the United States Marine Corps strategic narrative be problematic for WPS? I think that's the women's program or whatever. Look, that's the kind of stuff being foisted upon our Marines. And you want to know why recruiting is at all-time lows, why morale is at a low. You know, we watched what happened in Afghanistan. We tuck tail and run, leave $85 billion of crap there. And now General Milley and all of these secretaries, Secretary Austin and all the secretaries of the Army, of the Navy, of the Marines, and so forth, they are all getting mad at Congress because we dare say, wait a minute, you guys are funding woke garbage, and that's harming recruiting and harming the military. So they want to blame us for highlighting what they're doing and then complain about it. That's what's going on in the United States military today.
Congressman, how much faith, last question, I'll leave you with this. How much faith do you have that we will get Republican leadership, who matters so much when it comes to these fights, to stand for something this time? Again, I'm not naive. I know the Democrats are going to get most of what they want. Are we going to get some kind of stance from our leadership?
I can promise you that there is a large and growing block of us that are going to demand that we fight and win change for the American people, or we're not going to be able to support this leadership or the status quo. Now, look, you've said it. I don't expect to get every single thing I want. I understand the tough vote that we have. Look, let's also remember, we've got one of our Republicans retiring. We have Steve Scalise. God bless him. Let's all pray for him. He's battling cancer, myeloma. Steve's going to be in and out of treatment. I understand how difficult this is. I'm not saying it's my way or the highway. What I'm saying is, damn it, stand up and fight. Pick a fight. Let's go to the American people and let's win it. I've never seen an administration more at war with its own people than what I'm seeing out of this administration, and specifically at war with the people of Texas that I represent. And for all of these hand-wringing Republicans who go, oh my God, we're going to have a shutdown. Oh, that didn't work out very well in 2013. That's garbage. Yes, it did. We won seats afterwards. The American people followed us. They were believing in Senator Cruz. There's a reason Senator Cruz did very well in the 2016 presidential election, came in a strong second. It's because he fought. Name one thing you're proud of your Republican majorities doing in the last 30 years. In my lifetime, I can't remember a damn thing that Republican leadership and Republican majorities have ever given the American people. Nothing. They talk about welfare reform. They talk about tax cuts for, you know, corporations. Come on. Like, when have they stood up and fought for you or me? Okay? And that's what we need to do.
Yeah. Man, that's a sad reality. Chip, thank you, sir. I know you got to run. Appreciate you.
All right. God bless, Jesse.
All right. Got lighten the mood next. Before we lighten the mood, let's do something awesome. Let's do something awesome. Let's make sure our dogs live longer. Wouldn't we all do that? If you could, if I could just give you right now, hey, would you like another year, 2 years, 3 years with your dog? Would you take that? Of course you would. Well, then why aren't we all giving our dogs Rough Greens? There's no nutrition in your dog's food. It's all dead food. Your dog doesn't give nutrition unless you pour Rough Greens on your dog's food. That's how your dog gets nutrition. It's got vitamins, minerals, omega oils, probiotics. It's all in Rough Greens. Don't have to change the food. Just pour some Rough Greens on it. Free bags. Free Jumpstart trial bags. All you pay for is the shipping. Call them. 833-33-MY-DOG. Or you can go to roughgreens.com/Jesse. Remember, dog food is dead food. Finally give your dog some nutrition. We will be back with Lighten the Mood next. All right, it is time to lighten the mood. And we had a bunch of different directions we thought about going today, but it is 9/11, and I know a lot of people, especially younger generation today, they won't remember Mike Piazza. He was this great catcher from back when I was younger, watching baseball all the time. And look, we all remember it. 10 days after 9/11, Mike Piazza got up to the plate, and, well, here it was.
Lopez wants it away. And it's hit deep to left center. Andrew Jones on the run. This one has a chance. Home run! Mike Piazza and the Mets lead 3-2.
It's pretty cool. All right. I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast.